Yeah, and I think most pitchers will give you the same answers, which is, you know, guys that are easy to get out, or guys, I never found anybody that I didn't respect that stepped up there with a major league uniform and say, well, you know, all I go to is throw down the middle of the plate. Oh, that doesn't work, you know.
He's got to bear down on every guy that's got a major league uniform. Right. Then in 56, they had a Pirates had a manager, Bobby Bragan, and he was, I think he only lasted like a year and a half.
I know.
Did you have any recollections?
You know, Bobby Bragan was, he was a good manager. He was a good manager, but with the ball team that he had at that point in time, we were not that good. And there were times, you know, there is a time when nothing seems to be going right. You know, every move you make or whatever, you know, it's the wrong move and so forth. Or you get a pitcher in there and he doesn't get the job done or whatever, you know, you get frustrated. And I remember in Milwaukee, I think it was Milwaukee, where he asked the bat boy to go get a Coke. And so he not only embarrassed the ball club or the ballpark or the ball club by taking that and going out to the umpire and giving him a drink. And they got into a pretty good argument and so forth, and he was thrown out, you know, for showing up an umpire and so on, you know. And so, you know, I was embarrassed, you know, for him to be, you know, to do something like that. And I know the umpires was really put out with someone, with the manager doing something like that.
So that was disrespectful.
And I think that hurt his career as a manager. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he only lasted a year and a half, is because there was a couple incidents that took place that I think that hurt his career as a manager. Everybody liked Bobby, you know, he was a good person and everything, but I think we were playing so bad that he just got so frustrated that it wasn't a matter of sticking up for his ball, for the team or anything. It was just something that would infuriate an umpire, you know, and that's what happened.
Sure.
So, but, yeah, but anyway.
Well, when Danny Murtaugh came in, he really did a great job. I mean, that team was... They had a losing record under Bobby Bragan, and Danny Murtaugh came in and he actually won more. They were 26 and 25 to finish that year, and he was there to stay.
Well, you know, Danny was a player's umpire. You know, the Danny would stick up for you. You know, but the thing about Danny was he let everybody. He communicated very well with the players. He let everybody know what their role was, you know, and he says that this is the way this is going to be. They knew what they had to do, and they kept themselves, he'd tell a pitcher or an infielder that wasn't playing day in and day out, he says, listen, I want you to keep working hard. You never know when we're going to need you. Mm-hmm. But you're going to be playing. You're going to be, you know, we're going to rely on you in certain situations that I know that you can do, you know, and you're going to help our team. If you'll just, you know, have patience and work with me, we'll get this thing so that, you know, that everybody's going to be happy with their position, with the role that they have to play. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the case, and I don't ever remember any arguments or any guys complaining about not having to play or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anybody complaining or about, you know, that they're not getting to play and this, that, and the other thing, and, you know, and they're upset, and, you know, and so... that didn't happen. That didn't happen. Everybody was happy with the role that they had to play, and you know, and so that made, I think, all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You knew exactly what you were, when you were going to play, and even if you weren't playing regularly, Murtaugh would see to an opportunity to get you in the game and keep you sharp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, but that's that was I think the success of our team more than anything else, is because everybody knew exactly what their role was, and well, when Dick broke his wrist prior to the World Series, Dick Schofield stepped in and hit 300 for us.
Oh, I know.
You know, and that was that really did. You know, we thought, well, we're gonna, you know, woe is us. You know, we're losing one of our best players. Well, no, this Schofield stepped in there and just, we didn't miss a beat. You know, because he was ready to play and kept himself ready to play. And when he had that opportunity, he just stepped right in and did a great job for us.
Yes, he did.
You know, kept things going.
Well, in 58, the Pirates, they wound up in second place that year. They had a great year. And I know that was a big year for Frank Thomas. And it's funny that they traded him off after that year. And when they did, they had the pieces that were that they needed for the world champion team.
Well, you know, I think who was it we got for him? It was
Harvey Haddix and Don Hoke
and
Smokey Burgess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Well, you had to give up something to get something,
sure.
You know, and we got people that could come in and fill up that role for us, you know, and well, you know, everybody liked each other, I know that, you know, and but sometimes, well, I don't like to say anything bad about Frank Thomas, but you know, when he was traded to the Phillies, why, Frank, he'd kind of irritate you once, you know, he'd find something to tease you about, and then he would kind of keep digging and kind of digging a little bit more, you know, until you'd be upset. But it got to the point when he was in Philadelphia that he and the outfielder, not Ashburn.
Dick Allen.
It was Ashburn.
Dick Allen?
Yeah, Dick Allen, yeah. They got into it, you know, and got into it kind of bad. But I thought, well, you know, that's Frank. He's gonna, you know, he was just irritate you a little bit, you know, and then he won't shut up. You know, you see, you're getting mad. Well, you know, he would, it didn't make any difference with Frank. You know,
yeah.
But that was something that Frank would do. But he was a good, you know, he was a good player and a good friend, and still is a good friend. Over the years we played together, and I know that he was very instrumental, and I think he was the one that drove in the winning run of the 18-inning game that I pitched.
Oh,
you know, Bob Friend got the win of that 18-inning game that I pitched, and they finally scored a run for as soon as he took me out. Well, Friend come in, gives up a run. Now we're getting beat. But the next, in our half of the inning, we're in Pittsburgh. In our half of the inning, I can't remember who was Hank got was on base, but Frank and I think, as I remember, I think he hit a home run to win the game for us. You know, 4-2. Or 4-3, because when I went out, the score was tied 2-2 after 18 innings. And then in the 19th inning, they got a run off of Friend, and then we come back, and Friend wins the game, and Frank Thomas drove in the runs to win it for us.
You know, that was one of the all-time greatest pitching performances How did you feel about going so long? And I don't know, how many pitches do you think you threw in that game?
Oh, I have no idea. Usually, if a guy throws somewhere around 120, 100, you've got a great game at 100 and anything from 115 to, 120, 125. That's a good game for nine innings, because you're going to get a few strikeouts and maybe a walk or two in there. But, I've had games where they're going. As a matter of fact, I've gotten a couple scorecards that people sent to me. They showed my game as, I think, an hour and 20 minutes or hour and 15 minutes, and that's how fast. Some guys, sometimes you'll have maybe throw only six pitches in an inning because guys are hitting the first pitch or second pitch and they're out, and so, but I have no idea. I'm sure it was well over 200 pitches. I know that, but anyway.
Well, I read where you only had like 2 days rest when you pitched that game.
Yeah, that was only 2 days rest, right, because the starter come in sick, yeah. So maybe because it was against Hank Aaron and the crew,
Wow,
whatever.
Performance! What a game! Wow, and those big hitters Joe Adcock and Eddie Matthews and Hank Aaron only got a couple hits off you during that game.
Yeah, I think Matthews was the one that. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he'd hit a home run, I can't remember who got the hit or how he got their runs. All I have to do is go get the sheet of paper and I can figure it out. I don't remember some of the real particulars.
It was an awesome performance. It really was.
I know I give up 9 hits and struck out 12 and walked. I think there was 2 walks and one of them was intentional. But, I can remember that part of it, but as far as the other team is concerned, I don't remember who it was that got the hits and drove in the runs or anything, but I know Matthews was always a tough out, and he certainly deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, too, because of his career that he had, and anyway,
well, I'll tell you what. I'll get whatever information I can on that game, and send it to you. I've got this other stuff I want to send as well, so I'll make sure I get that for
fine.
You.
I've got the lineup and everything of that particular game, that 18-inning game. But what you're doing is fine. That's okay. I don't know if you could interview a Hall of Famer and get away with not giving them $1,500 to do it. Much time, but I don't mind talking baseball, and it's.
I sure appreciate it. This is a great interview, and I'm loving every minute of it. Now in '58 they lost Bob Perkey, he went to the Reds. Do you have any recollections on Bob Perkey?
Perkey and I were good friends. Matter of fact, we stayed in their home after he was traded. We stayed in their home 1 year, they were good enough to let us use their home, and so anyway, it was. I felt bad about Perkey leaving, because I knew, that he could help our ball club. Pitchers are hard to come by, guys that control strikes and pretty reliable. It's hard to see someone be traded like that. But
Joe Brown said it was.
I don't know the reason why. It wasn't because he had a bad year or anything.
No.
But I think it's because they think maybe that they've got some younger pitchers coming up that will still take his spot or whatever. And maybe I really don't remember who it was we got in return. It had to be one of the either Smokey or...
No, it was a guy named Don Gross.
Who was it that we got?
Don Gross.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And well, Joe Braun, I read where... Joe Braun said it was, he thought that was the worst trade of his career.
Yeah, well, it probably was.
Well, just because of Herky became such a...
That's for sure, but I don't think he really filled the bill, but...
Well, I went to high school with Bob Perky's son, and he died very young.
Oh, wow. Yeah, gosh. I remember that. Yeah, everybody has a hard time sometimes, you know. That's too bad, you know. Perky was... I was with Bob in Davenport, Iowa, you know, and we were good friends, you know, and, mm-hmm. and again, you know, you hate to see somebody that you've played with for several years and then have to say goodbye to them, you know, and have to compete against them, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was hard.
They brought him back in 1966. And he had picked up a knuckleball, I think, at that time. Now, I thought it seemed like from his line, he looked like he pitched well. But do you recall him coming back to the team?
Well, no, not all that much. You know, I know Branch Rickey wanted me to fool with the knuckleball too, but and I did. I did fool with it, but. I never threw one in any game because I just had no idea. I didn't feel good. I know I didn't throw it enough or work hard enough to learn how to control it and throw strikes with it. But because at that point in time my arm was hurt, and they thought maybe that's what I'd have to throw in order to get people out with instead of. But instead of that, I had a priesthood blessing, and I finally got rid of that soreness, you know. And so that made all the difference for me. My fastball was just as good as it ever was, you know.
Mm.
But it took a priesthood blessing and hard work to get it to the point where I had success with it.
Did you, you mentioned you had a blessing. Did you also go through any kind of physical therapy then as well?
Did I what?
Physical therapy is in addition. When...
I tell you, they filled me with shots in my arm and my shoulder. And all that stuff did for me was make me lose sleep. The night that I couldn't sleep the whole night.
Mm.
And then the next night I really slept well, but not after getting these shots. And I tell you, I don't know how many they tried to hit the spot or what they thought would take care of it. But I tell you, the day that I held my arm up in a kind of a vertical position with my shoulder, it went right down in the socket.
Whoa.
Right through. And when my stomach turned over when they went down and broke through into that area.
Oh, wow.
And after they went through with that, I turned around and says, okay, that's the last time a needle is going to go on that arm. And that was the last time. But you know what they did? They had red hot that they would put on my shoulder where it was almost numb. You know, I mean, it was so hot that it was numb.
Oh.
And I could go out and pitch 4 or 5 innings and get by, but then it'd get to the point where it'd wear off. And I just would have to quit. You know, I couldn't throw, I couldn't reach home plate. And so, yeah, I went through that, and it was not pleasant. But yeah, that's the only therapy that I had. You know, and of course I used the hot and cold treatments on it as well, but it was all inside, you know, the inside there, that muscle tissue that that I had torn. But they didn't know anything about shoulders back then. They knew something about elbows, but nothing about shoulders. And so I know when Bob Chesney, I took his place. He had either a bone spur or something in his shoulder, and then his career was over. He quit, you know? And so, but I loved the game so much, I wasn't going to quit. And I started exercising and doing my own thing. And plus, when I had that priesthood blessing and I went home and started throwing with my brother, it hurt. It hurt for just a little while, and then I heard something snap in my shoulder, and I said, what was that? And so finally, I kept on throwing and started feeling better and better and better.
Wow.
Until I felt like I could cut the ball loose and not hurt, you know. And then when I went to spring training after that, I had a good spring. I was ready to travel north with the club, but they want me to stay down with the minor league team and train another 2 weeks or whatever before they broke camp. But they were afraid to take me up in the cold weather and have it reoccur, you know. But anyway, that's when I went to, I think it was Kingston, North Carolina. But anyway, that's kind of the story having arm trouble and then fighting through it, you know, and still have a good career. So,
well, you put together some great years. I mean, despite all that physical trouble you were having, I mean, you were solid.
Don't learn to pitch, sometimes I think until you get a sore arm.
Yeah.
and you love the game so much, you're not going to quit, you know. So that's kind of the story, you know, because I love the game and I didn't want my career to end like this. And even when Danny asked me, you know, he says, if you're my own son, I'd tell you, you know, don't ruin your career, you know, by trying to hang on too long. Well, I took that advice and I went on the voluntary retired list. But then when spring come around, I told the Pirates, well, listen, I'm going to play. If you don't want to sign me, I'll try and sign with somebody else. Well, they took a chance on me, and so when I came back, you know, I had a pretty good spring and spring training, that's kind of the story before, you know, with Danny, when he was there, and he said that even if you're my own son, I'd tell you don't just try to hang on.
Right.
You know, but it's a good thing I did because I had my best year, as far as I'm concerned, in 1965.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
Yeah, because I was one of three that had an ERA, well, let's see.
2.15.
I think Koufax was 2.12. Who was second? But I was third. I was at 2.1, I think 2.14. At Koufax, I think, was 2.10, and somebody was 2.12, and I was 2.14. So, I had the third best ERA in the league that year. And yet I didn't make the All-Star game, you know.
Right.
Simply because I started off the season 0-5.
Is that right? 0-5. Wow.
Yeah, and my ERA was just slightly over at one at that point, just a little over one run per game. You know.
Now Harry Walker was managing.
Yeah.
Harry Walker was managing the Pirates at that point.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I remember that very well. Yeah, he was. Harry Walker should have just been a hitting instructor. He was good.
Well, he did wonders with Matty Alou. He got Matty Alou to become a better hitter.
Yeah, made Matty Alou a 300 hitter. You're right. Yeah.
But, you know, also at that time, Steve Blass came up as a, he was a young pitcher at that point. Now, do you recall him as a youngster?
Yeah. Well, you know, some of them make it and some of them don't, you know. And let's see, was I think Moose.
Bob Moose, right. Bob Moose.
Bob Moose was there, too.
Yeah, Bob Moose.
Yeah, he was a good pitcher and that did good for us. And but there were several of those guys that that showed, you know, really early promise, but they somehow or another they couldn't make the adjustment to, you know, to be consistent and didn't hang around too long, you know. So,
well, I'm sure you were a big inspiration because when you had your big year, you were 35 at that point, and you were showing everybody how to do it.
Yeah, well, you learn a few things, you know. You hang around long enough, you know, you can learn a few things and learn how to pitch and get people out, you know. You don't have to throw the ball 100 miles an hour anymore to do that.
But right.
Today that seems to be the thing, you know. You go five innings, throw 100 miles an hour, and then we'll get somebody that's done there, you know. I just don't understand all of the way they handle pitchers, you know, but that's what they do, you know. So they bring somebody else because they figure after you face the guy three times, you can't go a fourth time and get the same guys out. Well, to me, that's if you're a pitcher, you know how to get them out, but management don't feel that way. So you have to go with the flow. That's for sure.
Well, you were having a pretty decent year in 66, and then in 67, they didn't use you quite as much. Did you pitch some relief that year or that last year?
Well, I don't know, you know, I don't know exactly, you know, what, at this point, what happened at, I think at that point I began to lose confidence. I not necessarily in myself, but the whole team seemed to kind of fall apart, you know, and I don't know. When you are making pitches that you used to make and guys are hitting the ball hard, you know, it's about time to quit. And I think it was at that point, you know, I could have hung on. As a matter of fact, when I signed as a coach, I was throwing bat practice every day for an hour time, you know, and so on. I'll tell you, the manager of the Phillies, he come over to me and says, he said, Deacon, would you consider signing for me overall for our team? He said, because you're throwing much better than anybody that I got on my staff. And I said, well, no, Gene, I decided to, you know, to hang him up, you know, and so I just don't want to try and hang on, because I remember watching Warren Spahn and Robin Roberts try to hang on, and I was embarrassed for them. I don't want people to think of me and remember me like that, you know. I want to go off while I'm still throwing the ball decent and doing a decent job, you know, and yet I don't want to have that that memory that's lasting people to how I, you know, to hang on and be embarrassed like I was embarrassed for these two guys, you know. So,
You left on your own terms then. I mean, it was on your decision. You left on your own terms.
Yeah. Well, that's the way. If you can do it, I probably would have been better off to try to hang on, you know, another year or two. But I just felt like, you know, while I was still was still healthy and still feeling good, you know, I think it was probably the right time, which I did. You know, I decided to retire from it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, you know, one thing that they do today, they don't, back then, things are done so much different now. There's so much celebration and when somebody quits, I guess they're happy to see him go, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, no, some of them really deserve to be honored and for their accomplishments and for what they've done for the city and so forth. You know, that's important, you know, for people to get that recognition, and I'm glad for them, you know, when they do retire and you hear about a guy retiring and you know, they make the circuit, you know, and you know, every team or every city gives them a good hand, you know, for what they've contributed and so on. And you know, I think that's a class act of some of the cities that will do for athletes, you know, that have kept their nose clean and set the, you know, and kept had great careers for them and you know, the things that they've enjoyed watching and so on. So that's good. You know, I like seeing that, and I'm sure the guys appreciate it when that does happen. So
the people of Pittsburgh have never forgotten you. Yeah. I can tell you.
Well, when they. You know, when you're a Hall of Fame player and so forth, you know, that certainly, you know, gives recognition to the guys. And I'm glad for Maz and others who have made that. You know, I think there's several guys that should be there that aren't there, you know, because of, I don't have no idea. Mickey Vernon. You know.
Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you about Mickey Vernon earlier.
Yeah, you know, he's. I tell you, you know, what a career he had, you know, but yet, yeah, you know, he hadn't gotten the recognition, you know, and I feel bad for guys like that.
Pretty hard when you play for the Senators, you know, back in those days.
Yeah, well, you know, he was a complete ball player. You know, he was. There are some guys there that can do one thing, and that's hit home runs, and they're there, you know.
Yeah.
But guys like Mickey Vernon, they overlook. You know, he had a great career, hit around 300, you know, all the time.
Oh yeah.
Great
yeah.
First baseman, you know, and you know, great person.
Sure.
You know, gosh, I feel bad because guys like that aren't in the Hall of Fame as well, because they certainly deserve to be there, you know, and that's, I don't know. Their guys seem to go through their career and have great careers, and yet they don't get that recognition, but then I don't know why that happens, but it does, you know, so, and yet I know that's a lot political, because I understand that the writers will get together and say, well, I'll vote for this guy this year if you'll vote for my guy next year, you know, or mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And so I don't know if, you know, but I think, like, a lot of times I think these guys who get nominate the people into the Hall of Fame, they kind of agree and work, you know, to get certain players in that they feel like deserve to be there, which is okay. But it should be on merit as well, you know, and what he contributed to the club. You know, Ralph Kiner, you know, he could do one thing. He could hit home runs, and he couldn't run very hard, you know. I mean, he mm-hmm. was adequate, but you know, but people stuck around to see him hit because he could hit home runs, you know. And yet, I remember I lost my first two games because this one, both were against Robin Roberts against Philadelphia, a little pop fly over second base, our shortstop, gosh, well, his name will come to him, but he runs back and hollers, I got it. Well, he hears Ralph coming in, so he stops, Ralph stops the ball falling in, just like they did in the game here last night with the Yankees.
Yeah.
They pulled the same thing, the first baseman, the right fielder. They stop, the ball falls in, you know, for base hit, the run scores.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of clinches the game. Well, that happened to me twice. Same two guys, same score, same everything, you know, and yet I end up losing both of those games because the ball fell in. those things, you got to remember, you know, but Ralph, you know, a great guy. He contributed a lot to the game and certainly deserves to be there. But the only thing that that really got him there was the home runs that he hit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him.
Oh. You know?
But with Mavs, you know, he did a little bit of everything for us. And everything was very important for us, you know.
Sure.
And there wasn't anybody that I know of who could make the double play like Mazeroski. Because the ball just looked like it made a U-turn when it came to him. You know,
he didn't really use his mitt for catching.
There were times that I actually didn't think that he had a chance to get him, but he did.
Mm.
You know, and so, but that was Mazeroski. But he certainly deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, too. You know, There's a lot of Maz did a lot of with his bat, and I credit that to Danny Murtaugh, because I remember when Maz started out, every time we got into a situation where we could score a run or something, Maz would walk up there with looking over his shoulder because he knew he was going to be replaced.
Oh.
And Danny was the one that told him, he said, Maz, when you walk up to home plate, if you look back, I'm going to take you out of the game. I says, that's not going to happen. You're my hitter. You're going to be there. But I don't care from thick or thin or whatever the situation might be. If when it's your turn to hit, you're going up there and hit. So make up your mind to be ready on every time at bat. And so, but that's the way it was with Danny, you know, he let you know what you're supposed to do, and he went out and tried to do it. That made all the difference for Maz.
Mm-hmm.
He became a good hitter for us and a clutch hitter for us.
Oh,
so,
yes, absolutely. You were talking about Hall of Famers. I agree with you on Mickey Vernon, and you know who else I believe who I'd like to see in the Hall of Fame is Jim Cott. I think he's been a great pitcher all his career and a great ambassador for baseball, and I think he needs to be in.
Well, you know, that's sad, you know, that some of these guys that like them need to be there, you know, and get that recognition because they contributed so much, you know, to the team and the community or whatever, you know, and so they should be there. There's no question about that. So, but anyway, there's nothing.
Well,
it's my feeling about the game today. They got so many cultures on the same team that they're not a team.
You know what's funny? Lindy and I talked about it after you mentioned that the other day. We were talking about it. And, you know, it's something that we really never considered, I guess, you know, when you think about it. But it's...
you guys are good ball players, you know, but you're not a team, you know.
Yeah, it's a bunch of individuals, isn't it?
It makes a difference. It really does. I you know, and I look back and know what kind of a team it was that we had together, and you'll hear the Astros, you'll hear other teams, guys saying, you know, we're a bunch of guys that love each other, you know, we pull for each other, you know, and you know, there's a few teams that are really connected with each other, you know, and they know that they'll have your back. Every time you fail, they're going to win it for you, you know?
Sure.
And so, anyway, it's
You know, I wanted to ask you about your coaching, and then you had experience in Japan, and I'm really interested to hear something about that as well, because that again was a completely different culture, and I'm sure that, you know, how would you compare?
I had the chance to come back. You know, I coached for a couple of years there, and I had they had a manager change, and I had the opportunity to come back. I was asked to come back, and I says, I refused it because I knew I would have, well, in my heart, I would, I liked everybody, but I knew that I couldn't manage with this particular man, because not manage, but to be a coach, you know, with this particular person,
mm-hmm.
simply because I played for him. I know what kind of person he is. I know how negative he is. Not all the time with how the game should be played, or because his theory was you throw enough mud against the wall, some of it's going to stick.
Mm.
Well, you know, and so, matter of fact, he was not well liked by the players because he was, like I say, so negative. He said, "Well, why didn't you do it this way?" You know, you know good and well what pitch you're going to get there in a situation like that. You know the pitcher, you know that he can get his curveball over. Why are you looking for a fastball right down the middle when he's got great control of his curveball?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it was stuff like that that I, matter of fact, I know that when I was there and there was a meeting going on, a lot of times, I come in and I said, well, where's coach? Where's the manager? They're having a meeting. Really? And I'm not there? You know?
What? Why would they do that?
Yeah. And so, well, you know, I knew that that I couldn't be a part of that that staff at that time, and so I decided not to come back.
Yeah.
But, I enjoyed working with the guys. You know, I had to get on Bob Peel about his attitude, you know, and so forth. His approach
was Bob Peel receptive to your critique and advice you were trying to give him?
Yeah, because. You know, I threw bad press and I was hitting to the outfielders, Bill Verdon and them guys, and I was hitting the outfielders, you know, and I'd be danged. He's pitching tonight and he's not even in the bullpen. I go in, he's got his feet propped up reading the newspaper. And it's like 20 minutes before game time.
Huh.
You know, he had no time to warm up. And so, I said, Bob, I says, for heck's sake, get your uniform, get out there, and you're not going to be ready to start the game. And I told the manager, I said, Skip, you got to walk the first guy. He's not even ready, you know. And so anyway, and I told him after the game, I said, Bob, you know, one of these days you're going to wake up, this is all going to be over. And you're going to wish you could go back and do it over because you didn't take advantage of the opportunity you had. I said, you should be winning 30 games, not 20. You should be winning 30 games with the stuff you've got. And so I did. I saw him about 10 years later, and he said, you were right. He says, I wish I could go back and do it over. And I said, well, I tried to help you, but you wouldn't listen. You know, and so, but that, you know, that. Another thing that bothered me, because we had a team that wasn't like 1960. and everybody did their thing, you know, and that was Bob. He had other things he wanted to do, you know. He wanted to, you know, he had to, I don't know what all things that he wanted to do, but I do know that he wanted to, you know, buy a music box and carry it around and listen to music and that sort of thing. He had other things that I really don't know what all his interests were, but that was Bob. He just had other things he needed to do. But
he was a guy that had the tools. He had the talent, and he just couldn't seem to put it together.
Yeah, that was him, you know, but. I tell you, he can throw the ball through a brick wall, but he didn't apply himself, and because of it, you know, his career didn't last very long. So, and I felt something bad about that, but that's what happens, you know, when guys are not committed, you know, and really work hard, and that's infectious.
Oh, sure it is.
As well,
when you were coaching for the Pirates in '69, Steve Blass had a good year. And you know he was one of my favorite players, in those years. And
he told me, he says, when you were my coach, I had my best year, and I thanked him for that. You know, I said, well, you know, you deserved it because you worked hard. And then when he couldn't find the strike zone after that, I wondered, well, what's going on?
I wanted to ask you about that from your perspective. What happened? Is it something that's in a pitcher's psyche was he afraid of hitting somebody?
There's two things that I could attribute it to. It's not that he wasn't working hard and trying and concentrating. First thing was they lowered the pitchers now. And so, but the thing that I think really affected him is when he took his windup, he brought that right arm back and he would kind of cock it behind his back. And by the time that foot hit too quick, if that mound had been left the same, that foot would have gone him down and it helped him to get on top of the ball, out in a, release the ball out in front of his face. But as it was, that front foot would hit too quick and his arm was still, hadn't caught up with his body, and that's why every pitch left was left high. And I think that little cock that he had with his arm and back, it made the difference, you know. And plus the lowering of that mound made all the difference. That made it difficult for him to be in the position where that front foot was, and that about the time the front foot hits the ground, that arm should be right even with your shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in the point of where you can get there and release the ball. But when you release it back up and, you know, back up before you get out in front of your face, like, it's going to be high. No matter what you do, it's going to be high.
Yeah.
And so you've got to get over that front foot, you know, and I think, you know, that I really think that I could have helped him, you know, if I have the opportunity, because I throwing so much batting practice, I could feel when I was throwing the ball low, too low, I knew I had to lift my front foot just a little bit higher so it wouldn't hit too quick. Because it hit too quick, I'm going to be throwing in the dirt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Yeah. That's amazing how you broke that down. How much did they lower the pitcher's mound?
Pardon me?
How much was the pitcher's mound lowered? What did they?
Well, you know, I don't know whether ours was standard or not, but I would say that it's supposed to be at least 18 inches high, but you know, it can still be 18 inches high, but if it doesn't drop down quick enough, you know, from the point of rubber going down, if that is flattened out, you know, to the point where, you know, it doesn't drop, then, you know, it's like pitching off a flat ground, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't help you. It hurts a lot. it puts a lot more stress on your arm and so forth, because your whole body is not in position at that point. You know, if it's flat, if you're really throwing hard, well, it's difficult to keep the ball down, because you know you're not in position to release the ball out in front. You know,
yeah.
And it's too bad that in Blass's case, you know, that hurt him more than anything was that little cock that he had in back of his back with his hand. You know, he'd make the cock, he just kind of cocked the wrist. It come by the time he got in position to release the ball, it was always right up here, almost even with his shoulder.
Yeah.
He never did get over his front foot to throw it, so... Anyway, it's something I think, you know, I could have helped him with if I'd been there.
I wish you could have, yeah.
Yeah, so, but anyway, he did, but those are the two things. I know they changed the pitching mound that the year that he had trouble throwing strikes, so, yeah. And that's sad.
That is, it was a shame. He was a great ball player, I think.
Yeah, he's a fun guy. Yeah, he's a fun guy, and he's very dedicated and to the game, and
he did had a nice career as a broadcaster. He's done a great job with the Pirates.
Yeah, he's done well. That's for sure. Yep.
So when you after you left the Pirates coaching staff, did you coach elsewhere?
When I left, I went right to, to Brigham Young University. I coached there for 10 years, and we won our division every year that I was there. And then we had the Japanese team come over and they had me working with their pitchers, because our pitchers did such a good job against their hitters that they wanted our pitchers. I knew a guy. We had a Japanese instructor at the school, and he was in my office. He worked with gymnastics, and so we're good friends. And so anyway, he was there and talking to some of the people, because he knew some of those people that were on the Japanese team and coaches, and so they asked me could I help those pitchers throwing the curveball, and I taught them, you know, told them what they had to do, and so they wanted me to come over to Japan and coach for the Seibu Lions.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of their major teams over there, major league teams, and so I took the job. I quit BYU and went over there and for 2 years. They want me to sign a 10-year contract, but I wouldn't do it.
Wow, 10 years.
Because, because after 2 years, I could have stayed, but I'd had enough. I'd had enough of the game at that point, you know, and so I came back and decided to stay home, because first of all, the decision wasn't that I didn't want to go back. It was, the fact was that they were supposed to take care of my taxes, and they didn't. And so it was like spending my next year over there for nothing, you know, and so
so there was a misunderstanding of the contract or the
that was difficult, you know, but I stayed there with them 2 years, and I told my interpreter, I said, as soon as the motorson goes up in front office, and he did the following year, I told him, I says, as soon as he goes up, this team will win the championship. And that's exactly what happened.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, because he was not a good manager, you know. He made so many mistakes in coaching and putting on plays and so forth. It was not good, you know. And And so that you know, I decided that I would not come back because, well, mainly because, you know, the situation where they didn't take care of my taxes.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, so, how did you find their attitude or the organization of their team or their say team spirit or the way they coach,
well,
the
know,
way they practice?
It's altogether different. It really is different because I was supposed to write out a report every month about what I felt was wrong with the team or how things were going and so forth, and I did. I told them, I said, these kids work out so hard. They work out 3 hours before a game. I said, by the time the game comes, they want to sit down and rest. Hmm. You know, they don't, their energy is gone. I said, for this team to win, they got to cut down on all the tough work, the hard work that they have, you know, before game time.
Yeah.
And, they run, they hit, they feel, they do it excessively. You know, I've seen a pitcher warm up in the bullpen, pitch batting practice for 35 minutes or half hour or whatever. Then I see them during the game warm up 3 times, then finally get in the game the last couple of innings, get about 3 outs, you know, and they didn't give up any runs or so. So he starts the next night. He will start pitching the next game next night. And so that's how they work, you know. And this pitcher will pitch as long as he can, you know, and he gets in trouble, and the new pitcher will come in. But they throw every day. Every day, either in the bullpen.
Did it seem to hurt them, or was it a benefit?
Well, I will say that they throw strikes.
Hmm.
But they had one way of doing it, and I changed that for them too. I said, none of your pitchers here will throw inside because they're afraid the guy's going to hit it out of the ballpark. If a hitter knows that you're going to pitch him outside, that makes hitting easier. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, that's the way it was. And I taught this one kid. I finally got him to pitch inside. He was breaking bats. The guys were popping up. Now everybody pitches inside. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that was their problem too. That they wouldn't pitch outside inside. Everything was outside, away from the hitter. But that's changed now. And that's changed for good, you know. But anyway, I took a weight program over for them, too, to get them physically stronger, upper body.
Yeah. You know?
And so that's helped them as well. But anyway. Well, listen, I got a beep on my phone.
Okay.
My phone is
that's
ready
great.
To go, so.
This is great. I think I just wanted to wrap it up then. I could go for longer than this, but I just wanted to ask you just two more questions, if I could.
Okay.
What do you believe was your most important contribution to the game?
Well, I would hope that it's integrity, you know, discipline, commitment, you know, and dedication to the game. Those are the things that I tried to, you know, to exemplify in my career. It does take patience, you know. Just again, when you not have a good team, if you just go out determined and committed and dedicated to, you know, to do the very best every time you go out there, you know. And I hope the example also, in my own opinion, setting the right example for younger kids, no smoking, no drinking, you know, and taking care of yourself, how much better that makes you as an athlete and makes your career longer. Some guys have drank themselves out of the game and did things that, but yeah, you know, keep your nose clean and do, you know, make right choices and work hard at the game and love your teammates. Mm-hmm. You know, that's very important to me, you know.
Well, that's great. And so the last question I have is, who is the most influential person in your life?
Well, of course, I respected my parents, you know, of course, but as far as playing sports and that, I've had coaches that I admired and respected. I think I've learned a lot from you know, from my teammates. You know, I think I've been taught a lot of things that you know, how to make right choices and to do things that well, you know, even with Babe Ruth, you know, I had the opportunity to meet him, but I wasn't impressed because, you know, he had a cigar in his mouth, and I heard stories about, you know, how he didn't really take care of himself, you know. But back then, yeah. You know, everything changes, you know, in the course of time. It was so common for some people to drink, to smoke and those kind of things that they've never been taught differently.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that with so much information out there now, they ought to know that, you know, you go to bars, you're going to get in trouble. You know, mm-hmm. You go to bars and drink, and so eventually you're going to find trouble, mm-hmm. You know, and so stay away from those kinds of things, you know, and so, but that's, as far as it being influenced, I was taught to work by my dad. I was taught to work by my dad. And, but I've also been taught by my mother how to, you know, what caring and what love is. And so those things I think I respected my parents for. But on top of that, I'd have to say, the most influential person in my life has been my wife.
Hmm. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. She's got a pure love, you know.
Yeah.
It's you know, you hear about the pure love of Christ. Well, I have a wife like that.
Well, you certainly have been blessed in your life, and I heard you have something like 32 grandchildren.
Yeah, we got that, and then 46 great-grands.
Oh, I didn't know about that. 46. Wow.
Great-grands, yeah.
I don't know what you do at Christmas time.
Yeah, the great-grands are coming quicker than the grands. We're through with grandkids.
Oh,
we're in the great-grands now.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, having the opportunity and the honor to talk with you for these several hours has just been, I couldn't have been more pleased with this interview. The only regret I have is I wished I would have had a chance to meet you in person. But I just want to thank you for everything that you've given to baseball and to the people in Pittsburgh and what you've given to the game of baseball, Mr. Law. I think you have a career that you've really had a wonderful life, and we're all proud of you.
Well, I've got some great mentors, and that's wonderful too. And I appreciate that, sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the one. This is not part of the interview, but I understand that the Pirates are going to get together next June for the 60th anniversary.
Well, that's good information. I appreciate knowing that. You bet. That'd be a wonderful thing to do.
I would love to, if there is such a get together, I'd love to just come and meet you and shake your hand.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. We'll make that happen, sure enough.
Okay, and I'll gather up the stuff that I have, and I'll be sending it to you as well. But
okay, very well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.